Welcome back to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. I am Dan Canobio. He is the former WBO 140-pound champion, Chris Algieri. How are you, Chris? How's everything? How was New Orleans, man? Sounded fun.
Yeah, I don't know if I would use the word fun, but it's a very interesting city. Not my favorite place to visit. Sorry, Nolas. But I ate some good food.
Nice. Crawfish.
The highlight of my trip. Had some crawfish, had some gumbo. I had some duck andouille sausage gumbo. Ooh-wee.
Wow. Probably the highlight of the weekend because it was not a good main event. We'll talk about that first. But first, before we get into the fights, I want to thank everyone out there. We got to 10,000 subscribers on YouTube. That's a big number for us. Our goal was 10K by the end of the year. We got it halfway through. Thank you, everyone out there that has subscribed. If you have not subscribed and you're watching this video, what are you doing? Hit the link and sound off in the comments.
You remember I told you it wasn't going to take all year? I told you that straight away. You brought it up. I was like, there's no way that takes all year.
No, you're right. And Chris, I try to make these goals that I think are reachable, and you're like, oh, smash those goals. That's why you're the world champ. Like, didn't you say you set out a goal when you were like 12? I'm going to be a world champion?
Yeah, and I smashed that goal, and I should have actually made my goals much higher. So I'm just passing on my wisdom from the mistakes that I made onto our show.
Thank you, Chris. You're a big part of the success of the show. 10K is awesome, and we're going to keep on growing. Let's get into our first topic, Regis Progre, and we're also going to talk about Tim Zhu. This past weekend, we saw Regis Progre in action in New Orleans. You were there on the call for DAZN. I'll just ask you, what the hell was that from Regis Progre? What happened?
I had the chance, you know, obviously we listened to his post-fight interview. I got to speak with him yesterday while I was on the Sean Porter Portaway podcast. Regis was a guest on the show, and he was kind of, you know, he was sticking to what he said. I mean, he was being very honest. He was like, it was a bad performance. You know, the guy just ran. He had a lot of out of the ring issues fighting at home. He's like, I never want to fight at home again. So, you know, a lot of it was laying it on, you know, the fact that he was fighting at home, partly on his opponent, but he said the same thing. You know, I mean, he was very honest about his preparation as well. He's like, I didn't prepare for somebody who's going to move. All my sparring partners were in front of me. We thought we were going to have to bang. He just didn't have a game plan B, which, I mean, at this level,
it's weird.
You gotta be able, I mean, listen, he's not the first guy to run from you. And he showed no cutting off the ring ability. The urgency didn't come until like the last couple rounds, which is what I think won him the fight. And really, he won the fight on body language because neither one of them landed in punches. So,
dude, they set a record. Least amount of punches landed in a 12-round title fight. They broke a record that I thought would never be broken, Casemiro and Rigondeaux, which is regarded as probably the worst fight ever. Like, they landed 84 total punches. Rigondeaux and Casemiro landed 91. So, yeah, it was, you know, statistically, you know, that's not the end all be all. It's not a record you want to hold. It was literally landed the least amount of punches in a title fight. And we're talking a 40-year history of CompuBox.
Well, at least that's a testament to both of them in terms of their power. The least amount of punches landed, both guys dropped each other. So at least they could punch.
Yeah, it did have it's weird because it had started off. I was like, oh, this is going to be a shootout. I think you actually said that on air. And I was like, yeah, it is. Because the thing we knew about Zorilla is that he was a heavy-handed fighter. Push. And obviously we've seen Progre in his career enough. But from Progre, it felt like he just didn't want to engage. It felt like he was throwing jabs from 5 feet away.
Way too far away.
And if he did cut off the ring, he wasn't making Zorilla pay. Like, he wasn't engaging. It's almost like he knew that he had some big fights down the pipeline and he didn't want to get cut. He didn't want to get hurt. He didn't want to get into a firefight. Like, I said after the fight, put this guy in big fights. I've been saying this for a while now. He's 34, 35 years old. He's had a very up-and-down career. Like, his biggest fights came 4 years ago. We've talked at length about all the promotional issues he's had. Okay, now you're with Matchroom. You chose Matchroom. These hometown fights are very tough for all the stuff outside of the ring, tickets and, you know, everything that comes with fighting a hometown fight, Chris, you know all about that. And then you got a tune-up fight when you have already been a champion before. It's just a perfect storm for him where I feel like he doesn't need to be in these tune-up fights anymore. He should be fighting Matias, Teofimo, Haney, Broner. I'll just name names. Like, fights that he's going to get up for, because hometown fights, tune-up fights for a guy at this stage in his career aren't going to do him any favors. And he gave us a dud where now we're questioning where does he stand at 140.
In his defense, which I'm not going to give him any defenses in terms of this performance, was he was supposed to fight Liam Parra. And completely different style, southpaw, guy who would have engaged probably more and probably would have been there to get hit a lot more. But regardless, you gotta perform, especially at home, man. I mean, listen, I've had some stinker performances at home too. That not stinker, but they just didn't. I didn't perform well. But you got to make a fight out of it. At least try to make the fight. You know, if the guy's not willing to engage, just, you know, get out there. But I think he got buzzed early. I think he realized how dangerous. Listen, that guy, Zorrilla, he can really punch, you know, harder than I expected, actually. The punches that he was throwing ringside looked very dangerous. I can't believe that he didn't fight like that when he fought Barboza. I called that fight as well, and he didn't look like the same guy at all in terms of his style moving around the ring and in terms of his power. If he had that power that he was showing on Saturday night with Barboza, that fight could have been a very different fight. But yeah, I mean, I think that Regis could have done more, should have done more, but like you said, was probably protecting what's coming down the pipe.
You know what it reminded me of? Like, this is a kind of like a deep cut reference, but Jermell Herring, he fought Jonathan Oquendo before, when he had the Frampton fight lined up. And they had that nasty cut, and he kind of, I wouldn't say the word quit, but even though Bradley said he quit, he like found a way out of that fight, and because he knew that he had a Frampton, a career payday coming. Same thing for Prograde. Like, he knows he has a big fights coming. Like, that's the whole plan was when he signed up at Matchroom, was to fight Haney if he comes there, or do cross-promotion fights, big ones, which he should be in now because, like I just said, he needs to be in big fights. He's almost 35. But it lead me to believe, or lead me to ask this question for you, Chris. It's who is now, what's the top five at 140? It's a beautiful thing that we're seeing all these big fights at 140, like week after week, it seems like. And now we can kind of mix and match. We're going off of legitimate performances to make our top fives. So what do you think is the top five at 140 coming off of that Prograde performance?
Real quick, I'm going to defend Jermell Herring because I have a little inside track on what you're talking about. So that fight where with Oquendo, when he had a lot of trouble, he was dealing with some late long-term COVID, some long COVID. So I interviewed him in my book.
There it is. Plug.
So You Want to Be a Fighter. And he went into length into that in terms of, you know, how he felt going into the fight, his training camp. I was affected. We couldn't breathe, a lot of that. And then also the backlash that he took after that fight, which made him want to retire.
Yeah,
because of how bad he felt. He thought he was never going to be able to get back to his get his endurance back. He thought maybe this was a forever thing, not just a short-term thing in terms of how he was feeling it in his lungs. And then also the backlash that he got on Twitter because of how the fight was, because of people saying that he quit. But back to the question at hand, the 40-pounder. So, listen, I still have Prograde where he was. I just don't have him as being the man in the division. I got Teofimo as the man in the division, but Teofimo is technically out of the division.
I don't know if he's retired. I saw him at Spence Crawford. Me and Ronnie were there. Either. We saw Teofimo, and I was like, looked over to Ronnie, and he was holding court. I was like, hey, does that look like a retired fighter? Nope.
No. Listen, he's not retired, but he's going to be out of the running for a bit. He's got some personal issues to deal with in terms of, you know, his relationship stuff, money stuff. Oh, got a lot of stuff he's got to deal with. So I don't think we're going to hear about him like entering back into the ranks for a bit. So in the time being, I'm going to not consider him as a viable guy in, you know, at 140, because he's not going to fight for a long time.
But I still have him one though.
Yeah, no, he is the man. Yeah. I had a question about him or Prograde after this weekend. I got him.
Yeah.
That being said, Josh Taylor would be another guy I would still have in the top three.
But he has moved up though.
But he's out. Right. No. So he's out. Sorry. So he is absolutely out of the top because he's going to 147, which I think is a smart move. Prograde right there. You know, Prograde is the number 2-3 guy. I have him and Ramirez probably sharing the number two spot together.
Wow.
I got Tio number one. I got him and Ramirez is a really,
what about
really
Matias?
Matias is, he's going to be my number four.
Okay.
Based on being outside of the 2-3, the two position is going to be held by Prograde and Ramirez. People are writing off Ramirez just because he hasn't been in the news because of the fallout with the fight with Regis, but hey, money's a real thing and you gotta be conscious of that. Mm-hmm. And then number five. Who else we got a 40?
Catterall?
Because we got so many guys coming up.
Yeah, I can't put Haney in this yet. I can't put Garcia
until they fight at 40. I can't put him in there.
So
I'm probably gonna have like a Barboza Catterall.
Yeah,
I would have Catterall ahead of Barboza, based on the performance of Josh Taylor and because of he's done quite well in his career against, you know, not the elite competition. He always performs well. So I'm definitely going to have Catterall. Yeah, Catterall will be my number five. But I wouldn't mind seeing him and Barboza just to see who's going to get that next spot. Because, listen, when everyone's this good in a weight class, you're fighting to move up a position.
Yeah.
Like, you're not like, it's not like Catterall beats Barboza and then he's number two. It's like he beats Barboza and now he's number five. You know, like that's the kind of division that we're talking about. But yeah, I think it's all very, very tight in that top grouping. Matias just outside of Ramirez and Progre, and then Tio, how do you not have him as the man after this past two weekends?
I got Tio number one. I have Matias two. Because I think he's that damn good, and I'm going off of recency bias here. Matias looked great in his last fight, even though it was a while back. He looked better than Progre. Taylor is out of the picture. So I got Teofimo 1, Matias 2, Progre 3, Catterall 4, Jose Ramirez 5. And then just on the outside looking in are our fighters like Gary Antoine Russell, who has a perfect knockout ratio but just hasn't fought a lot because there's like a lot of PBC guys are not fighting as much as they should be. And, you know, Sandor Martin. Barboza is interesting because if Teofimo did text Paco over at WBO and said, I'm giving up my title, but you got to do more than just a text. Like, there's like paperwork now. Yeah, so we'll see. I still don't believe him. Like, he's telling us I'm retiring. He's telling us that I'm giving up my belt, but there's still people out there that just don't believe it. But the reason I'm bringing that up is because Barboza is number two at the WBO. So he may get a title shot now if Teofimo does like legitimately give up his titles. And I think Ramirez is highly ranked at by the WBO. So there's a lot of like good fighters in this division, and this isn't even talking about some of the guys that are going to be moving up, like Haney and Ryan Garcia officially. You know, Rolly's not in our top five. So that's what's going on at 140. Over this weekend as well, did you catch Tim Zhu absolutely destroying Carlos Ocampo, blowing up my parlay right in my face? I picked the over Progre Zaria, which hit. And then I was like, all right, Zhu with the dog bite. You know, Ocampo has put together some good performances since he got sparked out by Spence a few years back. I was like, this got decision written all over it. Nope. Zhu had other intentions. Took out Ocampo. Now this fight with Charlo is even bigger. I love it. Obviously, I wanted to see that Charlo Zhu fight last year. But this is like the one case of marination that I can actually like. Because Zhu is getting more and more experience. The fight is getting bigger. I think it's at its biggest right now. Tim Zhu and Charlo. What'd you make of Zhu's destruction?
You should have asked me before you made that parlay. I would have had you stop. I would have had Zhu stop in Ocampo quite early.
The odds weren't there, though.
Super unimpressed with Ocampo. I mean, aside from his one other step-up fight when he got sparked out against Spence to the body. Dude, even in this fight, he looked so out of sorts. He's just not world class at any means. He's in over his head so much, and I am very high on Zhu. I think Zhu is a very, very good fighter. He's probably the best, most fundamentally technically sound Australian I've ever seen. Even though obviously he's, you know, Costa's his son, but born and raised and coming out of Australia, he's the most technical fundamental fighter I've ever seen come out of Australia. I think his physicality, obviously he's got the genes, his dad's a legend. I think he's very, very talented, and I think he's streaking towards this Charlo fight. And I agree with you. I think the fact that this fight is happening now makes this a much more competitive fight. And honestly, by the time that fight happens, I think that Zhu could be the favorite.
No way. I had this written down. I know that Porter said it. Porter was in Australia on the call. I caught a little bit of your interview with Porter. I didn't get the whole thing. I know he said that Zhu is the favorite. I mean, he's not going to be the favorite by the books because Charlo's going to be a slight favorite. But I know what you're saying.
I said that I had Charlo as a
slight favorite. Yeah,
but I think by the time they get there, depending on what happens in the meantime,
I certainly think
it might be a smart bet.
Like, this was it. If you're listening, I'm doing something with my hands here. Charlo Zhu last year at this time, I thought they were still like a miles apart in terms of pedigree and where they're at in their career. Charlo sitting out with the hand injury now, and you got Zhu fighting Harrison. You got Zhu fighting Ocampo. Big fights, main events now on Showtime.
Gaucher
and
too. Terrell Gaucher.
Gaucher too, yeah. Like two or three fights here where he's able to get some experience. Like, this fight's a lot closer now. Like, I don't know if I would make Zhu the favorite, but he is a live dog, and this fight's huge. And I can't wait for it. It better happen this year, towards the end of the year, put an exclamation point on what's been a phenomenal year. But, yeah, I'm not ready to make Zhu the favorite, but it's damn close now.
Yeah, I wouldn't have him as a favorite, like I said. I would still favor Charlo, but I would put money on Zhu. That's how close I think it is. Even if, you know, if Charlo is the favorite, I would put money on Zhu.
Yeah, why not? I mean, I sprinkled some money on Spence because Spence right now is technically the underdog against Crawford. So I put
it very well could change as we get closer to fight.
That's why I did it. I can cash out and potentially lose like $20, but like I'm sticking with that bet.
Dude, 20 for you?
That's tough. That's lunch for me. I go all hungry that day.
That's not lunch, dude. You're in New York City. That's a Starbucks.
Yeah, it's true. It's one small Starbucks. What else do you want to talk about? Canelo Charlo. Last week, we were talking about Badu Jack. Badu Jack exposing Charlo, saying not only did he want a catch weight.
Exposing Canelo.
Excuse me. Yes. Exposing Canelo. Not only did Canelo want a catch weight, he wanted to fight me at with a rehydration clause. He wanted to fight me at 180. So I love Badu kind of throwing Canelo under the bus and even told him on top of it, why don't you go fight Benavidez like we all want to see? But I don't think Canelo's fighting Benavidez. According to ESPN, Deportes, Canelo is fighting Charlo next in Houston in September. Jamal Charlo, who has not been in the ring in 700-plus days. I'll ask you, Chris, even coming off of a 700-day layoff and the declining Canelo Alvarez, is Charlo a threat to Canelo?
Yeah, he is because he's stylistically and because of, you know, who he is. I mean, he's a great fighter. He's still undefeated. I would still favor Canelo in this fight based on Canelo being Canelo and the fact that Charlo hasn't been in a big fight or in a fight in a long time. But, I mean, Canelo, again, this is another I'll believe it when I see it because there's been a lot of talk about Canelo's next opponent. It was going to be Bivol. It was going to be Edgar Berlanga. It was back to Bivol. Then it was going to be Badu Jack. And then Badu Jack. I was disgusted when I heard the details of the Badu Jack deal. Last episode, we were talking about it. Yeah. And I was like, stop it. What are we even doing?
And then we found the details.
And then now we've actually been confirmed. So, but listen, I'm not mad about the fight.
Which fight?
I mean, about Canelo and Charlo.
Oh, I like
it. I'd rather him be fighting Benavidez. I think that was a smarter move. I didn't ever like the Bivol fight. I liked the Benavidez fight. I thought that it was daring to be great for Canelo. I thought it was actually winnable too. Not saying he was going to win, but it was winnable. But Charlo, it'll get enough people interested. It'll get Charlo out of quasi-retirement, which is good.
700 days is crazy.
He's a great fighter. That is crazy.
That's we've seen 300-day, we've seen year layoffs. We've seen 16 months, which is like, I think, Spence. 700? I mean, yeah. And he's not.
That's like a Chris Algieri layoff. That's crazy.
So when Chris comes back in the ring when he's 45.
I'll surpass that. I've had multiple double-year layoffs. So.
Wild. It's got to be so hard. And Jamal, we've heard bits and pieces of personal life issues and all sorts of things going on in his personal life, obviously. But, like, he's not going up to, I say obviously, because he's not choosing to sit out for that long. There are things happening out in the outside of his life that are preventing him from being in the ring. But now we're looking at our Charlo Jamal, who's never fought at 168. We talk about this on the show all the time. Meritocracy does not exist because if you went by meritocracy, Canelo Benavidez has been the fight for the last year. You know, Benavidez has been the number one ranked WBC guy forever. He was a two-time champion. I understand he lost his belts for things outside of the ring, weight and drug use. But, like, Charlo has never fought at 168. Hasn't fought in 700 days. Okay, here's your reward. You get Canelo. And it kind of goes against everything Canelo was preaching to us for a while, and that was what? You have to earn your chance at a fight with me. Charlo, you need to fight Benavidez, or Benavidez, you need to fight Plant, and the winner gets me. And now he's just going to pick Charlo. Like, there's a lot you can pick at this fight and, like, poke holes at it. But with that being said, like you just said, like, I'd much rather watch Canelo fight someone closer to his weight. If it's not going to be Benavidez, I'd rather watch him fight Charlo over Belanga, and I'd much rather watch Canelo fight Charlo over Bivol at 168 or 175. With that being said, on top of it, I still think all those guys are still in the running. Like, I would not be shocked if they end up with Bivol. I would not be shocked if it's Berlanga, especially if he knocks out Quigley. And I would obviously not be shocked for Charlo, because I think that's the favorite of all these fights.
I think Berlanga has a chance to steal the show.
I agree.
If he puts on a good performance this weekend, if he gets Quigley out of there in an explosive, sensational fashion, I think we see Canelo Berlanga in the fall. If not, I'm going to lean towards a Charlo fight actually taking place. But you talked about meritocracy. Apparently, in meritocracy, like if we're talking about just literally performance, that's not enough either. Because apparently economics isn't enough either. Because I think the Benavidez fight economically probably made the most sense too.
Oh, that definitely.
Fight, that's a massive, massive fight. This Charlo fight, not the same economical success I would think that Benavidez would be. I mean, you get the Mexican fan base. But with Charlo, I don't know.
Two years ago, this was the fight.
Oh, yeah.
But like, now, during COVID, like when Canelo beat Yildirim, and then he was going on to beat BJ Saunders, I remember saying after the Yildirim one, I was like, I want him to fight Charlo. I understand Charlo's at 160, but he's a bigger guy. That's the fight to make. It was before Benavidez was in the picture. Benavidez was coming. I think he just lost his title on the scale in the summer of 2020. So I was like, Canelo Charlo, this is a massive Showtime pay-per-view, a U.S. pay-per-view, Cinco de Mayo, whatever. Do it on September 16th. But now, I still give Charlo a pretty good shot because I think Canelo's on the decline. But you can't just sneeze at the 700 days off. You can't, like, he's got nothing behind him. No momentum in the ring, no momentum outside of the ring. It's a lot going on. But it also shows you how Canelo is... I wish all fighters had this, where he's not beholden to one network or one promoter. Like, Berlanga and Bivol are obviously the matchroom route. You know Al Heyman is saying, hey, Charlo first, then Benavidez. We'll pay you $100 million, fight on Showtime, do big number. You know, we have a better pay-per-view system than DAZN. So, on one hand, I hate this, but all these names and all these choices. On the other hand, I'm like, all right, it's pretty cool. I kind of wish, like, all fights work this way, where you're not beholden to a network or a promoter.
Well, when you're the face of boxing, and that's what Canelo is. I mean, he is the cash cow. You can make these super fights happen. That's really what it is, because it's not like rankings anymore, because nobody cares about the mandatories. They want to see the super fights when you have a super champion like Canelo. You get these kinds of matchups and kinds of fights. I'm not mad about the fight either, but like, I'm not going to lie, Dan, I'm a little checked out on Canelo's opponents. Just waiting. Happen or don't happen, I don't know. I don't like all the back and forth. I don't like getting excited about this, getting angry about that, and then none of it happens. It's a lot of push-pull that I don't really like. So if it's going to be Charlo, cool. Make it Charlo. Let's get it done.
Right.
If it's going to be Berlanga, boom. Yeah, that's going to be Berlanga. If it's going to be Benavidez or Bivol or whatever. But yeah. But I'm going to say I think it's either going to be Charlo or Berlanga based on this weekend.
Yeah. I think we're going to have to pick someone soon, because we're almost in July and he's going to fight in September for all the promotion stuff. But Berlanga this weekend, I think, is going to be a big sticking point, or I think it's going to be a big indicator. Hearn, you know, wants to make that fight and keep Canelo at Matchroom. So that's one. Yeah, I would love for us to come on the show next week and there's an actual announcement. Like, we're not speculating. We're being like, all right, this is the fight. It's happening this date. This is what it's going to be. Let's break it down. Let's try to figure out if Canelo still got it. But until then, we're trying to figure it out, because Canelo still is the guy in boxing. This is like Mayweather. Remember, Mayweather would have 4 or 5 opponents on his list, and we would discuss it at length or try to figure out who's the best one, whether it was Maidana, whether it was Khan. They were like arguing with themselves, Maidana and Khan. Facebook polls. Remember
but a lot
that?
Of things change. You know, a lot of things change as you get closer. Like, for example, like the Amir Khan fight. There was... it was supposed to be Amir Khan until he fought me. And then he essentially got beat up by me. So they were like, all right, well, I'm not gonna
fight source on that?
Khan now. What's that?
So do you have a source on that? That you beat up Khan? You?
Yeah, me.
I agree.
I still got bruises on my hands from that day. But yeah, I mean, that fight was the fight they were talking about, and then that performance happened and they were like, well, nope, that's we're not gonna do that fight anymore. You know, that's just kind of how it goes with these guys, because we're all waiting to see who they're gonna fight, and they can pick. That's what I mean by being the face of boxing.
Yeah.
Floyd was the face of boxing then. Canelo's the face of boxing now. So that's how it goes. When you hold that crown, This is positions that you're in, and we as fans will sit there like guppies waiting for whatever's going to drop.
Yeah, it's true. And he's in like Milan, Italy right now, Canelo, and it's some like
good for him.
Fashion
he deserves
thing.
It.
He's not even caring one bit. They're going to get a text like from Eddie Reynoso, like, "Hey, it's Charlo. Okay, see you at the gym in a few weeks."
Yeah. That's also what I love about him. I think he wants to fight everybody. I don't think he's used to that.
Yeah. So two fighters, or one fighter, isn't waiting on Canelo, believe it or not, is David Benavidez. Dan Riffio reported that he's fighting Morrell in September or October. Not so fast as David Benavidez. He screenshotted. I was actually on the screenshot. I don't know if you saw that. Because I tweeted Dan's news, Dan Rafael's news. I said, according to Dan Riffio, Benavidez and Morrell have agreed to a fight. Then David Benavidez kind of screenshotted it and put it on his story and goes, false. Like, this is not happening. He's saying, I'm not fighting Morrell. We're looking at Munguia. So I think this is just like a steep decline. Like, Benavidez had that fake $50 million offer for Canelo. Then we have this Morrell news that everyone's excited about, because I think Morrell-Benavidez is like a throwback type of fight, and it can establish who's the best at 168 underneath Canelo. And now we're going from Benavidez to Munguia, which I still think is a fun fight. But it's not like, all right, if you're going to dangle Benavidez Canelo, you're going to dangle a Morrell fight, and then we're going to settle on Munguia. Like, I kind of understand where Benavidez is coming from, but I would much rather see him fight Morrell, which I think would be awesome.
When I first heard that fight was going to happen, I was like, wow.
Right?
That's surprising. One, I was like, that's awesome, because you basically have two guys that no one's lining up to fighting each other, looking for the shot against the face of boxing, Canelo Alvarez. But I also thought, like, that's kind of a funny fight to make. That's a very dangerous fight, especially for Benavidez, who's much closer to a fight with Canelo than Morrell is. Morrell's looking for his breakout win. So the Benavidez fight makes a lot of sense for him. He goes in, he's 25 years old. I mean, they're both super young. He's probably going to be at 68 for a long time. Benavidez, I don't think, is going to stay here too much longer. He's already hinted about moving up to 75.
He's talking about cruiserweight, too, Benavidez.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big guy. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to stay at 68 for too much longer. He's hanging around for the Canelo fight, which is smart. But, yeah, and then when I heard that it wasn't happening, I was like, all right, that makes a lot more sense. You know, Benavidez, he's in a tough situation, because he was so close to getting the Canelo fight. He's been calling the guy out for so long. And then, you know, that falls through, and then this fight gets brought up, which, not sure why I was, you know, put out there that this fight was
Samson Lukowicz said it. That's his manager. He confirmed it to Dan Rafael. So Lukowicz and Benavidez are probably one hell of a phone call.
I wouldn't imagine they're at ends.
Yeah.
But then the Munguia fight, nobody's gonna like it, especially off of his past performance against Derevchenko, who is an actual middleweight. So Munguia's first fight at 68 was against a middleweight in Derevchenko. He struggled really badly early on, finished strong to pull out a very close fight. Good performance in the fact that he had to dig deep and overcome someone with vast amount of experience, but also is a 37-year-old middleweight.
Yeah.
Benavidez is literally the opposite.
Yeah.
He is a huge 68 pounder. He's 25 years old, and he's a stud. So I wouldn't favor Munguia to make that even a competitive fight against Benavidez. Benavidez is awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, that fight doesn't interest me or most people.
But I get why they're doing it, though. Benavidez is coming off of his own pay-per-view against Plant, where he was the A-side, and now he's waiting for a Canelo shot. Why would you fight Morrell? This is a slick Cuban fighter, southpaw. Like, it makes no sense to fight him. I was shocked when I saw that news. It makes not a lot of sense for Morrell either, but it makes even less sense for Benavidez. So they're like, okay, let's find a guy that we can potentially beat, who has a big fan base in Munguia, a big Mexican fan base. It's a commercial fight, and we'll most likely win. So I understand it from a building career standpoint. But that's the latest with Benavidez, Morrell. These topics are kind of all intertwining, like Canelo, Charlo, Benavidez, Morrell. These are all guys that I think are going to be at 168 for at least the next year, and hopefully we see them all fight each other. Another 168 fight will end with this. Weekend picks and predictions. You'll be on the call once again on DAZN. Let's rifle through it. Berlanga, Quigley. I think Berlanga's going to get him out of there. Quigley got stopped by Boo Boo Andrade in the second round. Boo Boo, as we know, is not a big puncher. You've seen his fights all play out a lot the same. I like Berlanga with a stoppage inside of 12.
I disagree that Boob was not a good puncher.
I knew you were going to disagree.
But it's
not what he's known for. It's not what he's known for.
No, of course, sure. But I've sparred with him. I've seen him in the gym. I've seen him sparring. I've seen him hit everything. You know, he's hit me. You know, the guy can really punch. And I've said this on the show before. Guys who get knockouts, it's not always about just the power. It's about the mentality. And Buba doesn't have that mentality of a guy, but he can punch, and he hurts everybody in the beginning of a fight. And then he just takes over.
Yeah, that's what I meant. His fights are carbon copies. He comes out fast. At the Quigley fight, he knocked him out. And all the fights we've seen after that for Andre, he starts fast, knocks the guy down early, and cruises.
But think about how many of those guys he could have stopped early as well and just didn't. You know, right. Listen, getting a stoppage or not getting a stoppage can happen based on many different factors. So we got Quigley out of there. I don't know if Quigley would be able to come back the way a lot of the other guys did. Like Smith did. That guy. I mean, he got dropped bad early, and then came back to fight really, really well against Demetrius. So I don't know if Quigley has that in him. You know, exactly the same. But whatever. I got Berlanga stopping Quigley too. But I think it's going to take a couple rounds. I think he gets him in those mid to late rounds. Quigley, I don't know how much he was trying to fight again when this fight came up, but it's one of those situations where you don't really pass it up. And honestly, I mean, Quigley could win the fight. He's not a bad fighter, and Berlanga has, as of recently, looked, you know, to struggle at times. So if Quigley has a performance of a lifetime, you know, he could win the fight, but I don't see that. I think Edgar's gonna get him out of there and potentially set up for a Canelo fight in September.
Yeah, I think Berlanga has to get a knockout in this fight. This is like his last chance, as weird as that sounds for a guy that's 25, but he signed with Matchroom to make a Canelo fight, so he's got to look really good, and I expect him to. I think Quigley's a perfect opponent for him to look good against. It's a pretty good card over on DAZN that you'll be on the call of. Konaki's on it, Rashad Mati. There's some good fights on that. There's also some fights on Showtime. Kind of a weird main event. It shows you what's going on at 160. It's a lot of people have left the division. Golovkin has vacated all of his titles at 160. His last one was this week. But Carlos Adames, who I think is one of the better 160-pounders that left of the group, is facing Julian J-Rock Williams, who spent a lot of time at 154. Like, I like Adames in this one, but I think J-Rock had maybe have a few tricks up his sleeve. But I would say Adames, maybe late stoppage. I haven't really thought about how it's gonna end. Maybe Adames money line I would put on that one, and Berlanga KO. That would probably be my parlay.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of J-Rock. We had him in the gym to spar with Danny Jacobs during one of our fights we were preparing.
Seems like a cool dude.
Oh, very cool dude, but also just like I've got a good boxing mind, and he's got that Philly style. He's picked up a lot of really, really nice tricks in there. He's got a lot of experience. With him, it's just the physicality. You know, as a 54 pounder, he was very skilled. Obviously, he won the title, but you know, fell short on a couple fights, more based on his chin than anything. So him going up and fighting a guy like Adames, you know, at a higher weight class. Adames is a beast. He's a big guy. Strong guy, young. He was also coming up from 54, actually coming up from 47. Yep. Early in his career. But he's a big dude. I would lean towards Adames getting the win in that fight. But I wouldn't be surprised if the old dog had one trick up his sleeve to pull out an experience level victory out of there.
Yeah, I think that will be my parlay this week. I haven't officially sent it to DraftKings, but I think I'd go Berlanga stoppage, Adames money line.
That should be a smart bet.
Yeah, I think that should be plus odds too. Lost my one last week, obviously, freaking Zoo. But been on a pretty good run so far. Enjoy New York.
Zoo, you know, it turned me off was Calderon and Giasov. I thought Giasov was going to get the stoppage. I actually predicted the upset in the Guzman Ali fight.
Oh my.
I just thought that
brutal
was
brutal knockout.
Oof, yeah, brutal fight. That fight was, I mean, incredible back and forth. No one should ever question Rama Ali if she's a fighter. She fought a hell of a fight. Tried to get up even at the end. Very, very tough fight. Guzman, I think, is actually a very special fighter. So I don't know if you know about this. When she fought for the title against Mercado, she had broken her forearm in the first round.
Oh wow.
And fought really well. If you watch at the end of the first round, because I do a lot of tape review when I call fights. If you end the first round, you see her rolling her arm and forearm. She had actually fractured her forearm, which I'd never heard of in a fight. Had multiple surgeries after that to fix the arm. And the big question coming into this fight, was she going to be a two-handed fighter or not? And I think that was obviously answered because her right hand looked very, very strong all night long.
Yeah,
so
what a freaking knockout.
What a knockout
of the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, fight of the weekend for me. That was the best fight that I saw all weekend. So I think she's actually going to be really special. I want to see her fight Mercado again and see what happens in a rematch if she has two hands.
That's the beauty of boxing right now. It's so deep that we're, you know, knockout fight of the weekend was an undercard fight between Ramla Ali. I mean, awesome stuff. All right, Chris, keep your hands up at all times, right? Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Subscribe to us on YouTube so we can reach 20K. See ya.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.